Peter Allen on the line today. And he's going to be talking about the effect of cause and sale and conclusions. And always an interesting topic and always interesting. So take a good listen there. And it's a very sound advice. Good morning to you, Alan. You there, Peter?
Yes, morning. Morning, Ivan. Nice to have you for a change. I presume Wayne's taking a little break. I hope he's not ill. So today's chat, we're going to chat about the effective cause of a sale. And there are two parts to that, in the sense that you get a sale of movables and you get a sale of immovables. So let's deal first with the sale of movables. In other words, immovable is fixed property, which has its own rules and regulations and which, of course, must be in writing. Movables is anything from a motor vehicle to a watch to a pen to a shirt or clothing or whatever electrical appliances and that type of thing that you purchase. So the situation with movable is that it's actually more simple and easier, in that, one, you just need an agreement. In other words, Ivan and Peter say Peter's going to sell Ivan a radio, and you say yes, I want to buy the radio, and then the other conditions that will come in there to make the sale effective is that obviously there must be a payment price, or if you're going to give it free, that's fine as well. And then there's the goods that must be exchanged. So the sale then is concluded basically when the object is handed to the other person, and then perfected when payment is effected, or if there's no payment, then it's done immediately. That's the type of sale that you can do. You don't need a proper agreement for it. You don't need to put it into writing. And that's the top where so many people say, but we had a shake of the hands. Yes, you can shake a hand on a deal like that, on a movable thing, but you can't shake a hand on the sale of a property and say, you know, I had a definite arrangement with the guy to sell his house to me at a fixed price, or his building and that type of thing. So basically the movable is quite simple. It's four parts there. There must be an agreement. There must be an object involved. There must be a payment involved, or, if you're going to give it away free. And there must be an exchange of both the object and the payment to conclude that sale. So, in fact, that's one of the first things you learn when studying law is, the effective cause of an ordinary simple sale, as it's called. We move on to the more difficult one, which is the effective cause of a sale of immovable property. Now, invariably, the fight with something like that is that it involves an agent, an estate agent, or these days you get people that believe they can introduce sales and are entitled to commission and things like that. As attorneys, we're not allowed to just pay a commission to anybody. So if you come along tomorrow and say, oh, my neighbor's house is on the market, I've got a buyer, Joe Soap, and I've arranged that the purchase price is agreeable and I want a commission of X amount. If you're not a registered agent, we can't just pay you that amount. It's got to be a completely separate agreement between you and the seller and outside of the sale. So it's not like an estate agent. A lot of people introduce sellers, and then believe that they can get commission through the attorney, submit to us an account to say X amount is owing, which is not the case, not allowed. They may well be the effective cause of the sale in the sense that they've introduced it, but whether or not they can earn on it is different. Yeah. Sorry.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is, and there's a lot of fighting that happens over that. And then a couple of other things that go with the effective cause of a sale is, so often, people come along, you get people that ride around the town on a Sunday looking for show houses, and then I call it the Skellum ways of doing it is that they send the wife into a house, for example, in Beach Road. They married out of community of property, and she goes through, she likes it, she says, yes, I like it. And then they realize that, it's on the market for, say, Rand 10, and the commission is 2 Rand, and they can save the 2 Rand by going directly to the owner, and a couple of days later or a couple of weeks later, they send the husband to the owner and say, we're very keen to buy your house. And, then it comes up, have you seen it before? No, we haven't seen it, but we just like the looks of it. They lie like that, and they married out of community of property, so they think they're going to get away with it. you're going to get caught. It's not going to help you to do something like that. So you need to be very cautious.
Really no shortcuts there. That's like selling a 1.5 million rand house for 500,000 rand.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing that happens so often is that you get these people that ride around and look at show houses. So they go to a show house this week and there's an agent from Team X there. The next week, there's one from Team Y. And then, you know, they like the house, so they keep going back and back. And eventually they're taken there by Team Z to show the place, and they buy it through Team Z, and then, of course, Team X and Y come back and say, hey, no, we were the effective cause. He came to our show house. We have his name written in our book. We showed him through the house, and we were the effective cause. So you also need to be very careful. And people innocently say, well, you know, we don't know the rules of an estate agent. We went there. They showed us the house. We liked it. We went back a week later. There was a different, company, property sales crowd doing the house. We looked again and we liked it. And then the third time we came, we found somebody that took us through and, you know, we made the final decision with that particular person. So as an ordinary man in the street, you need to be careful in that regard, because the seller is going to be in trouble, not the buyer. The seller is going to be in trouble because all three of them will lay claim to the commission. And of course, the agents hate sharing their commission. You know, they call a listing agent, and then that listing agent takes up to 60-40 deals, 50-50 deals, and things like that. And that's official and done, and then it's written, carved in writing, as they say. Other than that, you've got to be so careful to make sure that it's not a multi-listing house that everybody's got, and, you know, you've been with one agent and then to another, and then people innocently do that. That's the sad thing, is that, you know, when you're looking, you go and look at something. I mean, it often happens to me if I'm looking for a radio or something, let's just say a hi-fi set, I'll go to Macro and have a look maybe, and then the next day I'll go somewhere else, or I'll go back to Macro, and every time there's a different person, and I don't think of it as being, oh, that first person that saw me, you know, is going to get the commission on it. Unfortunately, yes. I think we all think like that. We don't realize that there's a possible block on it, in the sense that the estate agent with immovable property will lay claim to it. And of course, they're very, very strict in that regard, because it's not every day that they sell a house. So, you know, the real estate agent is very important to take into account, and you need to make sure, if you're a listener and that you're purchasing immovable property, that you have not been to a number of agents. If you have, there's a duty on you to say to, if you've been to X and then Y and now you're with Z, you need to say to Z, hey, you know, I originally looked at this house with X and then with Y, just for the record, so that you keep yourself and the seller clear, you know. Because it's a matter of first come, first serve, basically, with the agents. The first person that introduces you to it is the one that is the effective cause of the sale, because they've taken you through it the first day when you've taken a liking to it and you've gone back and back and then accepted it. So you need to be extremely cautious, and there are a number of decisions in our courts on that regard. You know, the intervening factors that show that a prospective purchaser initially was with somebody, they may not have done the agreement. You know, people often say, but I never signed anything with them. You know, I went to a show house and we walked through the house, but they don't realize that when you go through a show house, they say, oh, just sign here to say you were, yeah, we need, you know, to show our boss that we've had people through the house. That's how they, I'm not going to say they con you, because they don't. They do like to know who's there, because it makes you a prospective customer. If you're interested enough to come and have a look, they know that they can phone you afterwards. Some people say they bug them. You know, other people are looking genuinely for property and that type of thing. So you need to ensure that it's correct. And then to sellers, I always say, you know, when you get a sale, go to your attorney. Don't be stupid. And the other thing that's happening so much of in our area, yeah, is that agents are persuading people not to use their own attorney, but rather to use an attorney of their choice. Beware of that. It's not the right thing. Your attorney is going to look after you. The attorney yes. that the agent introduces you to is not going to, well, I'm not going to say not going to look after you, but he's not going to give you the service that your own attorney is going to give you. You know, he's going to rush through and get the sale done. I always say when they come to us, if we introduce to somebody and they're not normal clients, I want to look the buyer and the seller in the eye. I don't want to be sitting in a restaurant somewhere or going into a shop and I see one of the buyers or sellers and I've treated them unequally or something like that. So it's very important the seller has the choice and make sure you stick to that. And like I say, if you get a sale, go to your attorney to check it. Don't be silly, because a diligent attorney, I mean, the first thing I say, I get them daily. People come to me and say, okay, we've got a sale. Can you check it? I'll check the agreement, see if there's, for example, a 72-hour clause. How good is the finance for the person concerned? Does the person qualify? Find out, you know, a couple of things about the person. And ask if the person has been introduced by any agent so as to protect them with that. Check to see what the situation is with compliance certificates. You know, say to the guy, you're happy that you're going to have a gas, if you've got gas, an electrical, a wood borer perhaps in some instances, and, you know, electrical fence certificate and things like that. Those are all the aspects that we will cover when people come to us. You know, we also need to say to somebody, people also don't realize that if you have a bond on your house, there's a notice period. So you'll pay a 3-month penalty if you sell today and you've got a large amount owing, and you can't do away with that. It's not a case of, oh, I owe the bank 10 rand, pay them their 10 rand. They'll put a penalty onto that as well.
Yes.
So, you know, sometimes it helps if the agent's buying or selling to somebody that only wants it in 6 weeks' time or so. You can then give notice up front as well so that you do away with a bit of that notice period. These are all the type of things that your own attorney is going to do for you. I'm not saying other attorneys don't do that, but I just find it most often that it's not done. You know, and so often my clients come to me and they want to know, what is this penalty? You know, what is this? What is that? I said, yeah, you should have come to us in the beginning. Now you come running now. I'm not here. Go back to the attorney that acted for you and ask him why they didn't give notice, why they didn't check if there was another agent involved and things like that. And you know what attorneys say? Oh, we got a sale and that's the end of it. I've seen so many attorneys say that, sadly and in my eyes, disgustingly, you know. You need to look after the client. You've been given a sale, and an immovable property sale is worth a lot of money, and the costs are there. And, you know, the other thing that the seller doesn't realize is that the buyer pays the costs. It's not for the seller to pay it. And, you know, that's one of the terms and conditions that they are there. In our Eastern Cape area, other areas, the buyer chooses, yeah, the seller chooses. Make use of that. Don't be silly. You know, so if I say it again and again, if you are a seller, have the mandate checked by an attorney before you sign it. Don't put pen to paper, okay, as Wayne and myself always say on this show. Don't put pen to paper before your attorney has checked it for you. If the mandate is an exclusive one, ensure that the offers from other estate agents are satisfied, you know, that the mandate, if there was a sole mandate, has expired. If it's another agent that's selling the house, don't get yourself into double commission. And then, of course, you know, make a list of all the people that have taken you through the home. Ask the seller, who's taken you through? I mean, the seller must ask the buyer, who's taken you through, and get a list of that, and get a list from the seller's agents as well as to whom they've taken through, you know, if you've got that. That's one of the things that the attorney can do for you. And, of course, the fine print, make sure that you've got everything correct there. Like I mentioned, the 72-hour clause is very important. You don't want to sell your house and it goes to go soap and he's got 3 months to find finance. But if somebody else comes along during that period, you've got no clause that says if somebody else comes, he must hurry up and get it earlier than the 3 months and give it, you know, and you get right of first refusals and all sorts of things. So make sure that your clauses are correct. Very, very important. And then, of course, as well, you know, the estate agent should protect you as well. You know, if you give them your property, make sure that they are proper registered estate agents. make sure that it's not a learner agent that's selling the property and their principal has not gone through the documents and that. We find that from time to time. You've also got to ensure that if there is an agent for the seller side, that it was reduced to writing the mandate. You know, I had one the other day where the person says, oh, this agent just walked into the house and sold the house for me. I never had a mandate with them, but another agent had shown the house beforehand. And then the agent argued over. And I, you know, when I said to the agent, but where's your instruction from my client to say that you can sell the house? Because now we're getting into a bun fight because both agents were claiming that they had sold the house. So, you know, you need to, the other thing that you need to check if you're a seller, when the agent gives you a mandate, don't just sign. Because more often than one, they'll tell you, you know, we're going to put a lot of money into advertising. We're going to spend a lot of money on this. We're going to come through the house. We're going to take photographs. We're going to advertise it on this, that, and all over the show. So we need an exclusive one for that purpose. Not necessary. That's what they do for a living, you know. And you need to make sure that their mandate is properly before you and that you know the details of it. And I always say to people, bring it to an attorney. You know, you've got some of them, believe it or not, that say, okay, we get a mandate for a month, but if the house is sold in 3 months after that period, we still earn a commission due to the expenses we've put in and things like that. Totally ridiculous and not correct, you know. So, yeah, that effect of course that we're talking about. Yeah, no, that's very interesting, yeah. You know, the effect of cause is basically the successful outcome of a transaction. In other words, it's when the sale is concluded properly and there's a buyer and the sale is going to go through. Beware of who introduced that. So, you know, the estate agent's commission can be a huge amount. You know, it's a minimum in most cases of 3 or 3.5% and can go up to 7% plus VAT. So be careful. And there are just so many court decisions where people have been caught with things like that. So,
yeah, I'm, you know, sure the effect of cause. Yeah, one's got to look at a reputable estate agent and, as you say, make use of a lawyer that you do know. And believe in me, from what you're saying there as well, and from past experience, there's lots of little things that you've got to consider. It's not something that just happens. So, yeah, very, very interesting on the commission there as well. If you've had other agents show you the house first, that one I wasn't aware of.
You know, it's like a bun fight. You know, they always shout and scream about used car salesmen, and you know, estate agents are also there earning a commission like a car salesman is. So, yes, you know, they're going to fight for their commission. They're going to want to get their commission. And rightfully so. Don't get me wrong. I back the agents. If I've introduced somebody and he's gone somewhere else to buy because he's maybe, you know, I've even had instances where, for example, a house was on the market for $2 million, let's say, and then another agent is able to persuade the buyer because the house has been on the market for 6-7 months, not selling. The person is moving from the Cape to Natal and needs to sell his house. And eventually takes an offer, takes a loss and takes an offer of 1.8, or maybe it's not a loss. And then the person says, yeah, but that agent wanted 2 and this agent only wants 1.8. You know, I've saved myself 200,000. Doesn't work that way. You know, you didn't give that other agent the chance to go back and see if the reduced price would have helped.
Yeah, that's where putting the offer goes into it, I would imagine.
Yeah. Also, you get people that live together and then they send one, like I said earlier, not necessarily the spouse you send in, you send the partner in who's got a completely different name. The agents will find that out. The agents are not silly. When the house is sold, the agents can see that the house is sold. The agents will have a look at to who sold the house. So be careful. You know, it's a very delicate subject, this, and like I say, the difference between movable and immovable is huge. The conditions are very, very different. You know, and of course as well, it's also very important that you understand, you know, we've had situations in our law where, for example, you go on a Sunday, Arvid, and look at a house and you like it, and then you say to Peter, your mate, hey, Pete, yes, I saw a nice house in Glengariff, eh? And then, you know, Pete's also looking for a house, so he goes and has a look at Glengariff. on the advice that he got from you. That's different. That's not the estate agent that showed you the house, showing him the house. And if in circumstances like that you go direct, the agent doesn't have any mandate for that person. So there are just so many things. But it all gets back to the same thing, you know, like I say every week on our chat, if you're going to do anything that affects you legally, take the time to go and see your attorney. Go and have a chat to him. Let him show you the pros and cons of it. I mean, I had one the other day where a guy sold, he just wanted to get rid of stuff. Well, he had a sale. And then when I said to him, have you consulted with your accountant? Have you taken into account the capital gains that you're going to pay on it? Because I believe that there's capital gains on the sale. Yo, the guy was shocked that, you know, he had to pay almost like $1.2 million. He didn't have to sell, so, you know, he'd rather kept it at that stage. He also didn't at that stage have proper preparation of all the amounts that he'd spent on the building and things like that as well. So it's not just your attorney that you need to consult with. In some instances where you're a business or you bought a number of property and properties, it's not your primary residence, you've got capital gains tax, you've got company tax, you've got, you know, trust as well. You know, in the old days, people used to hide property in trust because it was easy, or in a close corporation or company, and you just transferred shares. Revenue is caught up with all of that, so you need to be cautious.
Very much so.
Going forward.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter. And that is pretty interesting, and it's opened a lot of people's eyes, I'm sure. Wise words there, and especially on the commissions and hidden costs and all the things that you've got to go through there to make things legal. And if you chat to your attorney, you could most definitely save a lot of those costs. Thanks,
absolutely.
Peter, and Wayne will be back with you next week, Monday again. And thanks for your time and those wise words.
Yes, nice chatting with you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, and you have a super day there. And thanks, as I say, for those wise words. Cheers for now, thanks, and we'll catch you next week.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Peter. There's wise words there from Peter Allam, and that's put out some pointers there for myself as well. And one's got to be so careful there. Exactly how you go about business.